You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast. This is episode 280 with Jamie and Jason, myself. And this is kind of a part two episode to our last episode, which was regarding elders, and we're speaking with our guest here, Dr. Bill Knepper, and he is providing just some insights into what it looks like to not only identify potential elders, but what their role really is as a shepherd, and he's been very helpful just in helping us see the guidelines in 1 Timothy 3 as just that, not meant to be this impossibly stringent set of requirements so much as a helpful guideline so that the shepherds of the church are really the men who have that shepherd's heart and are there to care for the sheep in the congregation. And so, now we want to talk about developing these elders that have been carefully chosen, been selected either by the congregation, depending on the church you're at, or appointed by elders and affirmed by the congregation. That can look very different in different denominations, but in any case, when you are at that place where you have elders, and particularly if you're thinking of this as a lead pastor or senior pastor, and you're wanting to bring up other men or develop other men for that role. And we talked about in our last episode how some men will feel they aren't qualified. They will feel that they don't measure up. But I think it'd be great if you want to start, Bill, with just telling us a little bit about your approach for helping guide new elders into that role as they begin.
One of the things that we talked about last time is the process that we have used for looking for elders. Instead of having some side of kind of a nominating committee that goes around and looks for them, or even just the lead pastor looking for them, we have instituted a model whereby we ask the church to pray about that. In fact, we give them 40 days to pray about that. We ask them to select from among the body those that they would see as being a candidate for the role of an elder. What I found is that there's a phenomenal amount of wisdom that comes from the body collectively for that, and they generally surface really capable individuals. The next step for that would be to then have a conversation with that individual. And there's some steps to processes to that. One of them is I would bring that candidate in to have a conversation. It wouldn't be with all of the elders. I want to make it comfortable for him. So there'd just be myself and one other elder. And then we would have a conversation. We'd open it up to 1 Timothy chapter 3. And we'd talk through what the apostle has written there, and ask the individual if there's anything there that they know would actually disqualify them from serving. But occasionally you will get somebody who will come and they will say, I just don't know that I am qualified. I'm not sure I see myself as being eligible for this. It's really powerful to say to them, it's actually the church that has seen you as being eligible, as being somebody that ought to consider this. It's had a deep impact on them to realize that the body themselves are saying, we would like to have you be one of our elders. And so that brings them in with a certain humility, but a willingness to proceed. And we'll look at the 1 Timothy chapter 3. We'll go through those things and talk about what they mean. And mostly just asking them, tell me, if there's anything here that you know is disqualifying, it's not going to leave this room, but if it's that's true, you need to let me know. So everything comes out that way. I will say that there is one more step that we take in qualifying, and that is that I will call his wife, and I tell him I'm going to call her, that the final decision will be the questions that I have for her. I have two questions, and the church has done this enough that all, every wife now knows this is going to happen. I'll call her at a time when she can speak freely, and I'll ask her, do you believe that your husband is qualified for this position? And if she says yes, then I will say there's only one more question. Do you release him to do it? And that has been phenomenally helpful for those men as they work in that role, because their wife was part of the decision to release them to do that. They did that with their own free thought. And the result was that they're supportive and understanding when there's a long meeting because there's some sticky thing that has to get resolved, and they take care of that. So the selection process is huge in terms of just finding that person whose heart is yielded to Jesus and wants to serve his church. And one of the things we regularly did is we had annual retreats. They were not overnights. They were just a day, because these are all busy men, but they would all make the time available. They were retreats that were characterized by an enormous amount of prayer, conversation, talking about things, building relationships, and becoming vulnerable with one another. Beyond that, the attempts to sort of try and get them to take advantage of other training opportunities that might come along. And those come in a variety of different ways. You know, there might be a guest speaker that comes in, or a guest speaker that comes into a nearby town. So we'll encourage participation in that. Those are some ideas of how we try and both encourage them from the very beginning, saying, yes, I will serve. Because the body selected them, and then keep them sharp as they go forward.
Well, it is cool to see how, you know, the Lord does work in the hearts of people long before they ever necessarily recognize it. I'm thinking of, you know, a particular individual we have at Mountain View right now who, you know, has signed up to take Bible and theology classes from a seminary because, in his mind, he says, if I'm supposed to be the pastor of my home to my wife and to my kids, I should probably learn some stuff and be able to teach the Bible well. And, you know, the thought that struck me when I first heard that is I'm going, I wonder if the Lord is doing more there than just, you know, equipping him more as a husband and father. Not to say that's not happening. Certainly that is. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's just like, huh, that's really interesting that would be the route. And, you know, it makes you wonder if it won't be all that long until we see somebody like that as an elder, you know, because they've felt the Lord calling them to that, and certainly the church has recognized it, you know, that kind of thing. But I want to ask a question along those lines. So, yes, it's God's work. God calls these people. God raises these people up. And but how do we encourage that more in, I guess you'd say, a philosophic way, where that's a normal practice for the church? And one of the thoughts along that line is what Paul says at the end of 1 Timothy 3, where he says, I'm writing these things to you hoping that I'm going to come to you, but in case I'm delayed, I am writing so that you will know how one ought to act in the household of God. Seeming to imply that, well, yes, these are the standards of an elder to pursue, to seek after, or the standards of a deacon to pursue and seek after, but really these are actually for the whole church, that this is something every believer in Jesus should pursue. And, you know, to the degree that it's like, in one sense, you're developing elders, but in another sense, how do we encourage that kind of attitude in the life of the church?
I do think that, to repeat myself, but it does seem to me like that does contribute to it, just the way you're talking about. There might be other ways that will occur to me, but one of those is this whole idea of the 40 days of prayer. It really is, in my opinion, it is profound for the body to start just praying every day for 40 days. They know that there's a time limit to it. We chose the 40 days for obvious reasons, because it's frequently a 40-day period of prayer in Scripture. So we chose that. But there seems to be like a seriousness that comes out of that, a focus, and it's self-reflective as well. I had to chuckle about your illustration of the guy going to seminary. Personally, when I went to seminary, my intentions were profoundly selfish. I was going just because I wanted to know more about the Bible. I was fascinated by my new faith, fascinated to discover the Bible that I'd owned since I was a little boy. Had way more to tell me than I ever imagined, and I wanted to know more. I went with my own agenda, but the Lord utterly and profoundly changed my heart while I was there. So nothing was the same afterwards. I think that, church should be fun. It should be constantly challenging and offering new opportunities, and it ought not to become boring and staid and predictable. That's what keeps the body alive and functioning. It's the Lord grows lives through all of that turmoil and chaos. And so I'm probably not answering your question, but I don't have a specific idea of how I would answer that. I think you create an environment, a culture of a love of the word, a love of truth, and a commitment to walk in it.
As you're thinking of developing these leaders into, obviously, more and more so following Jesus, more devoted to Christ, I'm just trying to think of a way to phrase the question. I guess I'm wondering, what does it look like at an elder meeting? Maybe just give us kind of a broad understanding of elder meetings, their purpose, what's some of the goals and outcomes you want to see? And then maybe as a follow-up to that is how are those times used to really develop these men that are on the elder board?
Well, the elders meet weekly. That was our model. And I mentioned that the deacons only meet monthly, so the elders meet weekly. But with that came the caveat that if it was going to be difficult for anyone not to come, that we would cancel it. And it would be okay if we met three times a month or even two times a month, as long as we were all together. And so that was one of the criteria we tried to do. We wanted to make it possible, but we wanted to give them the freedom of knowing that if they really did have a conflict, we're asking an awful lot of these guys to serve in this capacity anyway. So then there would be just a time of a fellowship, making sure that we are keeping short accounts with each other, and a time of prayer. And then we'll talk about what's going on in the life of the church, and we each person's input is solicited. We're not rushed through the time, but we will take the time to make sure that we are all up to speed on it, maybe is what I'm looking for. The frequency of the fact that we meet that often keeps things in a short list. And only in occasions, those rare occasions, when something is really coming off the rails and we've got a situation that demands a lot more, then do we have to spend more time on that or start delegating people who are going to do this, that, or the other thing about it. So I think there's just real important for them to walk arm in arm, carrying each other's burdens. Everybody's fully aware of what's going on. And And then they're the eyes and ears that are out there in that congregation that next Sunday, and they're talking to people that they need to talk to and building relationships with those maybe who are, they're trying to figure out where they're coming from. They're shepherds. So don't try and make their job particularly difficult. I do offer to them the opportunity to preach if they want to. Rarely do they want to do that. They want to help in other ways, but they don't want to get up front and preach. So sometimes they'll teach a Sunday school class. We went through a season where we expected it of all the elders and deacons to teach. That was actually pretty stretching for them, but we also realized that it was exhausting for them. So we make that more optional as well.
On that topic, you know, the text there in 1 Timothy 3 says that the elders are able to teach, which doesn't necessarily mean, it seems to me, that they're gifted necessarily or called, right? But it does seem that there is some investment in them having the tools or the ability, right? Let's say something was to happen in the life of a church and all those who typically would preach are unable, whether that be illness or, you know, who knows what. And let's say you have one elder left over, and this really is a real situation, you know, in the life of especially little churches where, you know, if their one pastor is out, their bench is empty, so to speak. And so one of the, you know, one of the thoughts that came to my mind is just, how do we really do that in a practical way if we're dealing with somebody, let's say, that, you know, isn't necessarily called or isn't necessarily gifted for teaching or preaching? How do we do that where we give them the ability, we help them have the tools, yet not necessarily with the expectation that you have to use them unless, you know, some situation like that was to go down?
Well, I think that's probably the role there of that senior pastor we were talking about, somebody who's kind of taking charge of asking those questions and having a plan. So if you're in a small church and you recognize that if you're sick or something, who are you going to get on a short notice? And having the elders prepared to do that is a good idea. I do think that it's smart to have them pre-prepared. I think it's a good idea to have that conversation with them that says, what would you like to preach on? And maybe if they need help with that, work with them on it. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We have, so far with our elders, they've been pretty much willing to just take it on themselves, putting that together. And it may be more wooden, it may be more stiff. That's just the reality of it. But they do proceed. They do follow through. They get it done. So it doesn't happen very often. Of course, in our church, we have a number of alternate preachers. We have interns and associate pastors and so forth who can fill in. And so most of the elders have preferred that the preaching staff or the pastoral staff do the preaching. Been their choice. That's okay. But if they wanted to preach, absolutely, they should do it. But teaching is another thing. They can do classes, and many of them do. Many of them are good at teaching their classes, like Sunday school classes.
I just had a question about when, and this might be in an elder meeting, but when you do have disagreements come up, or someone voices an opinion that maybe the others don't really follow, what are just some practical things to make sure there's still unity and there's still that that sense of camaraderie and teamwork? And like you said, church should be fun. So maybe with that, how do you get out of the quarreling that can come from elder meetings and stay on task with what the meeting should be about?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jason, because you absolutely have to have a policy among the elders to address things like that. And our policy was simply this. You can vote no, but you cannot disagree. In other words, in the conversation, if the elders are trying to go somewhere, if there isn't unanimity, but we have to make a decision, then the majority rules. But the minority may not stand up before the church and say, I disagree. Once the decision is made, we stand as one, even if it wasn't a decision you wanted to do. That happens incredibly rarely, because most of the time we are all unified. If we're not unified, it's a cause for us to be very cautious and slow way down and ask ourselves, why are we not unified? But that is the policy. You can vote no. You can vote against something. You don't have to support it, but you do have to. I mean, you don't have to vote for it, but you do have to support it, support the decision. So I think there's really a strong need for the elders to present unity to the body. And that's understood by them. It's understood that you're not putting your brain on the shelf. We invite you to bring your who you are, your intellect, your thoughts, your history, your opinions, your perspective on the Word of God, and we will hash it out, and we'll take all the time that we have available to us. But when we have to draw a line, we will make a decision. The majority will prevail, but everybody will walk as one.
So what happens, how would you handle a situation? Let's say, let's build a hypothetical here, where you become the senior pastor, or they say, hey, Bill, since you're retired, why don't you come be the interim pastor here for a year or two? And you come into the church and then realize there is no elders, either because the previous pastor just was the one-man show, which is actually a really common problem in really small churches, or there was some sort of conflict or something, and then all the elders resigned and they left. And so here the church is now, and yet, looking around the room, you're going, I don't see anybody necessarily seeking elder qualifications, you know, just immature in their faith, or, you know, have some serious sin issues going on in their life, or what is the practical step forward for a pastor who finds himself in that kind of position, where you're thinking, man, I don't see any good quality potentials, or maybe anybody acting, you know, or showing any kind of eldership function in the life of the church, or desire, or leadership, or spiritual maturity. What would you do in that case?
No, that's a great question, because that's the reality of what's out there a great deal. And I think it really kind of hits the nail with your head, if you will, on what the elder is. It's not just a billet. It's not a position. It's not some office like a church secretary. These are shepherds. And so if you don't have any shepherds, you can't very well appoint any. You walk into a congregation and it's small, it's gone through some difficulties and challenges. You may be the only person there for a period of time. Granting the assumption that it's the Lord that's led you there, he probably has some plan for that congregation, but it's going to take a little while to get there. And so there's then just the faithful teaching and preaching of the word and the building up of the body. It might take a while before you start to see the presence of some people that can then begin to help shoulder the shepherding load. But you're right, it does fall largely on the one guy when the church has been through a tough time or is just had some poor leadership. So it varies all the way from a tiny little church that just maybe was big and had arguments and people left to a great big church. You are looking for shepherding heart, a shepherding man to help with that. And if he's not there, then the last thing you want to do is put somebody in there who isn't. You just need to go it alone until such time as you've built up the body to meet that need. And if the Lord has, long-term plans for that little particular church, he's going to bring people to it. That's where the faithful teaching and preaching of the word and building a loving congregation, you can do a lot more by yourself than by trying to argue with somebody who's in the wrong seat, in the wrong place. So, yep, that's what pastoring's all about.
Yeah, and out of curiosity, do you... I know that some elder teams will go through books, or maybe the senior pastor will encourage they attended a conference or a seminar together. Is that something that you would also recommend, or you'd see the value in that?
I do see the value. I think sometimes to do something like that, that book really has to be spectacular. And there are some out there that are. They just are really, really good. And so those become great team builders. I think it's very valuable. If it's all business and no nourishment, then it becomes a starvation issue for the people that you have helping you with this shepherding role. But I do think it has to be done with the balance. Again, they are, and as a rule, usually busy men. They are not in the role of an elder out of boredom. They're there because they were already recognized for making a difference in people's lives. And so you don't want to become a burden, but you do want to make available resources for development. That's why I think an annual retreat is a really good idea. Sometimes reading a book, like you say, a really good book that together... I don't wouldn't read it together, but they would each read a chapter, and then there'd be some time in the next meeting to just talk about what that chapter said. Wouldn't make it laborious, because they will have already learned something in the reading of it. Those are all helpful ways to sharpen them, hone them for what they're doing. But I just think that you have to really be careful to balance that with already busy lives.
Well, Bill, we would love to keep talking, but unfortunately, we've burned up all of our time for these episodes. We are grateful that you took the time to talk through this topic with us. It's something that I know Jason and I have talked about quite a bit, and I'm sure our listeners out there have as well. I was thinking, as we close out this episode, what advice would you offer, or what encouragement would you offer to all the potential elders and pastors out there listening to us right now?
Well, I would encourage you, number one, to trust your flock. That if you're interested in finding some elder candidates, that you actually ask the body. Ask them to pray first, and then give them an opportunity to nominate the person of their choice. The first time we did that, I was awake most of the night. I was thinking to myself, what have I done? This is going to be a disaster. And indeed, it was kind of funny. The next morning when we got those nominees in, here's somebody who, bless their heart, had nominated a man who was completely unable even to drive. He was limited in that regard. So I thought, well, but the majority were very, very wise, on what they did. And it gave me such a powerful beginning to a conversation with that man. As not just, I'd like you to serve in this, but the body would like you to serve in this. They put your name forward and would like you to do this. It's a deep motivator to the individual when they hear that. It makes them realize that people have noticed them. And because every man, and we're all more judgmental about ourselves and thinking of ourselves as being less adequate. And so it begins to turn a corner for them and help them to do that. I think that's incredibly valuable. Trust that church. We've done that now here for, oh my goodness, probably 20 years. And it has been not disappointed. The church has always demonstrated wisdom when they have suggested names. And those are the names we go after when we're looking to fill a place, fill a role. So that, I think, is probably one of the biggest tips I would pass on. And then to just be careful of their lives. They are usually busy men. They're usually not just sitting around looking to get into mischief. And so use their time with care and recognition. Be efficient with the meetings that you have together. And free them up to do that shepherding job.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.